Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The FT. Welcome to World Weekly with me, Gideon Rachman. This week, we concentrate on the global economy. The Eurozone, of course, has dominated the headlines for months. But what of the other two key poles of the global economy, the US and China, respectively, the world's largest and second largest economies? The US is, by all accounts, still struggling to pick up growth, and China's been slowing for some months. But what are their further prospects? Joining me on the line from Washington to discuss the American economy is James Politi. Now, James, there's obviously an election coming up. The old cliche is, it's the economy, stupid. So how does the economy feel going into this election?
Economy feels weak. I think there's a very good chance that President Obama will be the first incumbent since FDR to face unemployment above 7.4% on election day. And things have been gradually getting better, but they were looking a lot better a few months ago. Job creation has slowed significantly in the last few months, and the decline in the unemployment rate has essentially stalled, and it's now at 8.2%.
And you also have had some discouraging manufacturing figures just this week, I gather.
Yeah, manufacturing used to be one of the bright spots of the recovery, and to a certain extent still is, but we had a very weak ISM survey which showed that the manufacturing sector was shrinking for the first time since July of 2009. That was the first month of the official recovery, and I think that's very dispiriting news for the industrial sector.
What's going on? Is that weakness from America's export markets, from the Eurozone?
Part of it definitely is. There was a significant drop in new export orders, which signals that really you're starting to see some contagion from the slowdown in China and India, and also obviously the crisis in the Eurozone.
How about the homegrown sources of economic woe? Because obviously all this started with the house price slump. Has America begun to get to the bottom of that and to sense that the debt problems related to that are finally working their way out of the system?
It looks like to a certain extent they are. There was obviously a huge dip in house prices, you know, in the first phases of the last recession, and then there was a recovery, and then there was a second dip in home prices, which now finally seems to be ending, and we're starting to see signs of life, really, in the housing market. There has been some small appreciation in house prices the last few months, and also a rebound in new home sales and construction spending. So that's one area which seems to be doing quite well, even though you're starting from a really depressed level.
And what's the public mood like? Do people feel depressed along with a depressed economy, or is there kind of hope that things are picking up?
Well, confidence has taken a dive the last few months, but I think people are still feeling a little bit better than they were during the depths of the recession. So clearly people aren't feeling great, but they can sort of see things improving.
So as the Obama team and the White House look ahead to the election, presumably they're going to try and fine-tune things as much as possible so as to pretty everything up for November. How do you see that affecting economic policy in the next weeks and months?
Well, they can try as hard as they can, but effectively fiscal policy is on ice because the Republicans are adamant on blocking all of the proposals, really, that are coming out of the White House in terms of new short-term stimulus to the economy. So the White House really is hamstrung at the moment. They can't do too much, and in a way they have to rely on the Fed to do whatever they can if conditions get worse. And the Fed did extend Operation Twist at the end of last month through the end of the year. That is buying long-term securities while selling short-term securities in order to lower long-term interest rates, but they could do more. They could do a new round of quantitative easing. which would be, you know, much more aggressive loosening of monetary policy.
That was James Polizzi in Washington. And now to Beijing, where they have a different sort of economic problem. Having got used to runaway growth for many years, the Chinese are now having to get used to a slightly slower economy and are trying new ways of stimulating domestic demand. Joining me on the line from Beijing is Jamil Andolini, our bureau chief there. So, Jamil, I mean, from a long way away, of course, we're all very preoccupied with the Eurozone here in London, but we get the impression that the Chinese economy is slowing. Is that how it feels over there?
Oh, it's definitely slowing. We've had 6 quarters now of slowing GDP growth, and in the last few months there's been very clear signs of a slightly steeper drop in most indicators and most growth indicators. So right now it looks like the government in China, well, definitely the government in China, after about 3 years of tightening monetary policy and trying to slow everything down, is now starting to try and stimulate again. They've just cut interest rates for the first time in 3 years, and they've approved a whole lot more infrastructure investments through their central planning agency, which they still utilize. And so things have definitely turned, and they're definitely trying to start to pump everything back up again.
Now, is this just a question of kind of managing an economy that's basically doing pretty well, or is there a sort of deeper concern that that there are all sorts of quite serious imbalances? I mean, how worried do you think the government is?
I think they're quite worried. I think what they're seeing is pretty much the end of all the easy catch-up rises in productivity and catching up with the rest of the world. I mean, China 30 years ago started from absolute poverty, everyone working on a commune, and all of the land collectivized, and extreme poverty and extreme inefficiency in the economy. And over the last 30 years, the Chinese economic miracle has been catching up with the rest of the world, really. They've kind of, the state has gradually extracted itself from the economy and allowed people to get on with making money and becoming more productive. But the limit of that catch-up model are starting to be reached. So China can no longer expect 20-30% increases in exports every year, which it's had over the last decade. It can't expect to keep building masses of commercial real estate, residential real estate that people are going to sink their life savings into, because prices in real estate are too high for most people, and they've already built a huge shed load of real estate. So, I mean, the two main drivers, particularly over the last decade of the Chinese economy, have been that, exports and new investment for new factories for export, and residential real estate. But both of those two drivers are pretty much sputtering at the moment. And you can see the Chinese government looking for other ways to try and pump up the economy. They're trying to improve the social safety net, and they're really trying to shift the growth model to a more consumption-oriented model, and one where Chinese consumers will come into their own and start buying a whole lot of stuff. And ideally, they'd buy a lot of services so that the environment doesn't get completely ruined.
Can you finally just explain something that's always slightly baffled me? I mean, that on the one hand, I read lots of stories, perhaps some by you, about graduate unemployment, that graduates coming out of Chinese universities are finding it difficult to get jobs. And yet we also hear that the supply of labour, that of cheap labour, that kept China super competitive as a manufacturer, that's coming to an end, which always slightly surprised me in a country of 1.3 billion people that they could exhaust that supply of cheap labour. I know they're not the same phenomenon, but could you just give us a sense of the labour market, both for the graduates who are allegedly struggling to find jobs, and in the factories of southern China? Is it really the case that they can't find the cheap labour of old?
Well, they can't find the cheap labour at the really, really cheap prices. So what's happening is that people in the countryside, actually over the last decade, their lives have got a bit better. The cost of vegetables has gone up. They can sell their vegetables for more, and pork prices have gone up. They can sell their pork for more. So they're less willing to go to a grimy sweatshop in South China and work for a pittance and have their fingers chopped off and not compensated. Do you see what I mean? So what's happening is really the average Chinese person is less willing to work in a sweatshop. At the same time, the universities about a decade ago, they doubled the intake of students for the university. It was a specific government policy that actually intended to double the number of university graduates over a very short period. So what happened is you had the same amount of jobs, you've got the same amount of sort of high-end jobs, but you've got double the number of people trying to go for them over the last half a decade as they started to graduate. So you have this weird split in the Chinese economy of far too many university graduates who really don't have that many marketable skills and are not hugely employable, and also there's not enough jobs at the sort of high end. And then you, at the other end, you have, you know, lots and lots of dirty factory jobs where, but not enough people, because living standards have raised in the countryside where all this labour was coming out of. Those people aren't so willing to do it.
Jamil, thanks very much indeed. That was Jamil Andolini in Beijing. My thanks to him and to James Polithi in Washington, to Martin Starbay in the studio here in London. Until next week, goodbye.
For more downloads, go to ft.com/podcasts.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.